I am happy to welcome you all to our seminar, Migrants in Higher Education, Fostering Cooperation at Universities. I am Johanna Kivimäki. I'm the head of the coordination unit of UNIBIT network here at the University of Jyväskylä, or Finnish University Partnership for International Development, that is UNIBIT. We are a network of Finnish universities which aims at strengthening universities' global responsibility. Through different modes of cooperation between universities and also with other institutions such as ministries and funding agencies, we advance and support the interdisciplinary education, research, and also societal impact of the universities related to international development and global challenges. During the past year, UNIBIT has had the pleasure to also develop and coordinate the pilot project of SIMHEI UNIBIT, or Supporting Immigrants in Higher Education in Finland, which is funded by the Ministry of Education and Culture. Through this project, we have aimed at fostering the role of universities in facilitating the integration of recently arrived asylum seekers and refugees in Finland. Similar to our project, also this seminar is very first of its kind in its scope and thematic focus in Finland, I mean. So hopefully during these 2 days, we will be able to encourage inspiring discussions and sharing of best practices, incentivize some cooperation and even jointly develop some new methods for responding to the acute challenges and needs related to migration issues in higher education. So welcome from my part. But now I have the pleasure to invite the rector of the University of Jyväskylä, Matti Manninen, to give his welcoming words.
Oh, I wish you all welcome to the University of Jyväskylä. Just a few words about our university. We have about 15,000 students, which I usually say that it's the same amount as the other top universities, because if you take the 10 top universities in the Shanghai ranking list, the average number of students is about the same. So you don't need to be very big to be good. We are aiming at being a science university doing top science, and we've been quite successful in that. We get the third most funding from the Academy of Finland or the Finnish Research Council, competitive research funding, and we have been very successful of getting the ERC individual grants also in our university. The main fields cover many topics in the multidisciplinary university. I don't go through all of them in that, but related to this topic of this seminar, at the moment in our research and teaching staff, about 15% is international staff, and it's increasing all the time. And also now on administrative staff, we start to have international members. So, and coming to the, and we are, I'm very proud that the Ministry of Education and Culture has given us, together with the Metropolia University of Applied Sciences, the responsibility to coordinate this network supporting immigrants in higher education in Finland. It's not easy to be doing research in and studying in another country, even if you are not then have any problems like what we are now talking with people who come here sometimes without their own will. I have been living 7 years abroad in five different countries, and even because I have been doing in research, I have always gotten the best possible support in the university where I go. But still, you always end up having problems because of the different administration, different culture, and so on. And now we are talking about the immigrants, which have even more problem than like I, who with my own will went to another, work in another university. So, said this, I hope that you will have a very successful seminar here, and I think this is a very important task what we have, not only the University of Jyväskylä, but all universities, also University of Applied Sciences, to give all support and help that we can give to foreigners who have come to our country and have some background, and not even background, but possibilities to take a higher education in a university. And we should put lots of effort in that, and that's why you are here, and I wish you a very nice seminar in university. And enjoy being here. Look also our nice city. We are very proud of being almost in the center of city of Jyväskylä. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your kind words. Next, I am happy to welcome Birgitta Vuorinen, the head of the Department for Higher Education and Science Policy from the Ministry of Education and Culture, to give her opening remarks.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Hyvää iltapäivää, hauska nähdä teidät täällä. Thank you for your kind invitation to the seminar and to the possibility to open the Migrants in Higher Education seminar on behalf of the Ministry of Education and Culture. The program we have in front of us is very interesting. It's covering several aspects relevant to the theme, and it's full of interesting talks, and I'm sure that we're going to have a successful seminar today and tomorrow as well. Like many other countries in the world, Finland faced a challenging situation in autumn 2015. The amount of asylum seekers and refugees coming to Finland exceeded all estimations. And within just a few months, Finland received more than 30,000 asylum seekers and refugees, more than 32,000 in a year, last year. The whole government started to think what could be done in order to cope with the situation as smoothly and as fast as possible. And several ministerial working groups, as well as groups at expert level, started to gather ideas and good practices from Finland and from other parts of the world. And one of the first tasks was to find the resources, both human and financial. In the field of higher education, the Ministry of Education and Culture and the Center for International Mobility, CIMO, invited our higher education institutions to a roundtable discussion. We wanted to learn more about our higher education institutions' reactions to a new situation and wanted to know how the higher education community is going to act in order to help the refugees and asylum seekers, as well as the whole Finnish society in this new situation. We were happy to notice that the whole higher education community has already started to act, all the way from grassroots level cooperation to organizational level cooperation, from joint cooking and football sessions to seminars and networks, from individual measures to institutional measures. And during that roundtable discussion, the innovative ideas, best practices, and experiences filled the room immediately. One of the results of that discussion is the SIMHE project, Supporting Immigrants in Higher Education in Finland. And on the basis of our roundtable discussions, it seemed that one of the greatest challenges is related to identifying asylum seekers and refugees' educational background. So how to identify their higher education background and how to promote their access to higher education institutions. How to recognize prior learning when there are no documents to use, or when there is not enough knowledge about different higher education systems and education systems around the world. And when there is not enough knowledge on the comparability of degrees. So that discussion was a starting point for SIMHE project. Metropolia University of Applied Sciences and Jyväskylä University started the SIMHE pilot a year ago. And this year, there are four more higher education institutions joining this group. And we are happy that from the beginning, SIMHE has been based on cooperation between higher education institutions, the Ministry of Education and Culture, CIMO, National Board of Education, and the Ministry of Economic Affairs and Employment. I think that this dialogue is important, that we have this dialogue, because SIMHE is not established to replace anything we have at place at the moment. It was not established to do the same work as the governmental officials or government officials are already doing, but to fill in the gaps in our system, in the Finnish system, when it comes to RPL, recognition of prior learning, validation, guidance, and counseling. And one purpose of the project is to connect Finnish higher education institutions, to network them. And another important aim is to network internationally in order to change good practices and to enhance, for instance, research in this field. And this seminar today is an excellent example of the international dimension of SIMHE project. The work of SIMHE will first of all help asylum seekers, refugees, and people with a migrant background in finding their way to higher education in Finland. That is the main purpose of the project. But in addition to that, I would like to highlight and emphasize that the project is producing and will produce new models and practices which in the long run will enhance recognition of prior learning in general and bring new thinking and good tools for admission processes of our higher education institutions. So there is a win-win situation. And I would like to use this opportunity to thank the members of SIMHE project for the work already done and to encourage you to work four more years, five more years, six more years, who knows how long it's going to take. And according to international comparisons, Finland is one of the best countries in the world for children and for women to live, and hopefully for men as well. But I'm sure that SIMHE makes Finland a better place for people with migrant backgrounds as well. And SIMHE helps the Finnish society to integrate immigrants into higher education and into the working life, which is a great challenge in a small country like Finland. From the economic point of view, we cannot afford to leave anyone behind. And from the human point of view, we do not want to leave anyone behind. Thank you, and I wish us all a productive seminar. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your encouraging and inspiring words. Now we will move towards the first keynote presentation of the seminar. Dr. Petro Gois is a professor in sociology and methodology at the Faculty of Economics at the University of Coimbra, as well as a researcher at the Center for Social Studies in Portugal. He is an expert in sociology of migration and quantitative methodologies. His last research-driven publications used quantitative and qualitative methodologies and includes papers and books on themes such as refugees in Europe, transnational ethnic identity, Portuguese immigration and emigration, Brazilian migration or Eastern European migrants, discrimination practices in the labor market, immigrants, descendants, and diaspora engagement practices and policies. Today, Professor Gois, is it okay?
Yes.
Thanks. will help us to widen our perspectives by focusing on migration issues in higher education in the global, European and Portuguese contexts. The title of his presentation is Facing Human Capital Challenges of the 21st Century New Mobility Era, Migrant Population in Higher Education, Students, Academics, Researchers. Welcome.
Thank you. Should I use this one or this one?
This one? Both are okay. If you want to move around, this is the one. If you want to stand.
Oh, I will stand. I don't need to move around.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for the invitation. It was... Okay. Thank you for the invitation, and it was my pleasure to come to this almost tropical city in this season. Well, just to advertise my university, yesterday we had 20 degrees, so it's almost the same as in here. Well, my as the presenter told you, I'm a sociologist and I'm a specialist in migration, not in education. So I'm a broader viewer of this problem than some of the other presenters will bring you. So let me move to my presentation. Well, my title is Facing Human Capital Challenges, but could be the reverse, challenging the human capital. So we need to be aware of these new challenges that are being presented to us in our times. This is a very interesting time to live because societies are changing very quickly and we are being challenged in our everyday assumptions. And we need to be prepared to these modifications in our lives. Life is in everyday changing and we need to be prepared. Well, let me start. Contrary to conventional wisdom, nationalism remains alive. And it's alive across Europe. And what we were supposing to live, well, this will go, is having its own... It's going... Okay. So even in Europe, nationalism is increasing. And that's the first challenge I want to present you, because we need to challenge nationalism as we live. And nationalism is being challenged by migration. In recent years, something that has surprised us is the Europe, it's not becoming a continent of more integrated nations, but it's becoming more and more a continent of isolated nations living inside Europe. Let me just tell you that it's not for today that Europe is challenged by migration, but in the past it was out migration. So, well, this is... Okay. Among this process of mobilization of migration in Europe, there were always students, academics, and researchers. And that's something we need to underline. This migration of students, academics, researchers, it's always be present in Europe in the past, and we have been exporters and importers of those kind of population. In fact, without migration, Europe will not be what is today, and what it was in the past or what it will be in the future. If, for instance, we talk about art, that inheritance that we receive and retransmit to the next generation, we must stress that migration created the European art. From the builders of cathedrals to the artists of the Renaissance, many were those who circulated, who created some of their best works in countries other than their own, and who left a legacy that bring us closer, that make us think as Europeans. They built, in fact, common memories that we now live in our present day. We travel to see those memories in different countries. In the early 20th century, the famous Paris School was not a school, but was in fact a multicultural event where Europe reconciliated with creativity. Can you? Okay. Many artists were part of that group, and you know some of those names, European names, like Mongliani, Parsin, Chagall, Kiesling, Soutine, Picasso, Klee, Jacob. All those guys lived in Paris in this multicultural school, and they produce what you know they have produced since they were together. In contemporary times, studies also show that immigrants bring growth and innovation in both the countries they came from and those they moved to. In the United States alone, immigrants have founded or co-founded companies such as Google, Intel, WhatsApp, PayPal, eBay, Tesla, and Yahoo. You all know these companies. They were made by first or second generation of migrants. Although they make up less than 15% of the US population, skilled migrants account for over half of Silicon Valley startups and over half of the patents of the entire country. The motto for the campaign of the United Nations last month was at least 100 migrants and refugees have been awarded of a Nobel Prize. And we must stress this when thinking about nationalist movements. So let's think on this in our way of thinking. So Tesla, Yahoo, Google, Nobel Prize, and then refugees. Today, in hope of controlling the near future, or the near future elections, I should say, we want to forget the past, and in doing so, we prevent the future. Populist politicians keep saying we don't need immigration, but any evidence-based research showed the opposite. Europe and every European country do need migrants. It's a common place that Europe is aging. According to the European Commission 2015 aging report, the dependency ratio of over 65 to the economically active 15 to 64 age group will increase to 50.1% from 27.8% by 2060. So, and in 2060, most of you will still alive, and some of us still working on 2016. That means that there will be just 2 potential workers per retiree, down from almost 4 at this moment. The aging of the population also shaves 0.2% a year of European economic growth, but it hasn't become a full-blown crisis yet. That will happen when pension systems grow unsustainable longer after current political leaders have left the stage. To keep the current ratio of senior citizens to the general population steady, Europe needs its younger population to increase by hundreds of millions, more than the current rate over the coming decades. There's no way to organically increase the EU population. You can't force people to make more babies, but you can teach people how to do it. That you can do it. Increased migration is therefore Europe's only escape from an approaching economic and social disaster. And we must be very aware about this. This is a European problem. This is not a Finnish problem, a Portuguese problem, a German problem, or an Italian problem. This will be a European problem in the future. Europe does not need mobility restrictions. On the contrary, it needs to find a strategy to prevent immobility and promote the movement of persons and their capacities. It's not free movement within the Schengen area that needs to be restricted, but the relationship of the Schengen area with the rest of the world that needs to be changed, allowing mobility to take place. In a society of moving ideas, moving services, moving capital, it's not possible to stop the mobility of people. Education is the pillar for the 21st century development. The world of higher education, with its national focus, national students, national academics, and researchers, have had its day. It's finished. There is no national systems anymore in education system. The higher education ecosystem is now diverse and global. Universities become unique kinds of global institutions. Universities are institutions intended to be durable and enduring. Universities are neutral conveners, assemblers of talent, and unmatched idea factories where the passion, creativity, and the idealism of great minds, young and old alike, gender neutral, race dispassionate, religion disinterested, can be applied to problem solving and advancing our societal and economic well-being. The pursuit of the future is the quest of the common good, which is shared by and beneficial to all. In recent decades, the number of university students worldwide who have received some part of their education abroad has been rising rapidly. There seems to be a positive association between study abroad and graduate job prospects. A major advantage claimed for study abroad program is that they can enhance employability by providing graduates with the skills and experience employers look for. These programs also increase the probability that graduates will work abroad, and so may especially benefit students willing to pursue an international careers. Numbers today are very similar to what they were decades ago. Out of every 10 tertiary students studying abroad, 5 are Asians, 3 were Europeans, and 1 African. Half of all foreign students studying in Europe, and 1/4 in the United States. 3 countries hosted almost half of the world's foreign students: United States, United Kingdom, and Germany. If we add 3 more countries like France, Australia, and Japan, 6 countries together serve 2/3 of the world's foreign students. While 25% of all foreign students were in the United States, they represented only 4% of the country's tertiary students. In the United Kingdom and in Germany, foreign students make up 1 in 10 total tertiary enrollments. In Australia, 1 in 6. 8 out of 10 foreign European students study in another European country. Around 50% of all foreign students are women. Nowadays, we are living in the mobility area, where a system where clients, users, and partners became the co-designers of their journey. Migrants and their descendants are already and will be part of the national education systems in destination countries. Universities are today multicultural sites. Ideas and human elements have multiple backgrounds and are all mobile. A student can start his graduate courses in one continent and finish his or her post-graduation courses in another one. Academics frequently move to teach in different countries, to present papers in conferences, or to participate in workshops. Disciplines, even in the social sciences and humanities, are losing their methodological nationalism to become global in their learning objectives, syllabus, and modes of delivering. Researchers, students, and academics are today the new Argonauts, to paraphrase from Anna Lee Saxenian's book on the entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley. Like the Greeks who sailed with Jason in the search of the Golden Fleece, the new Argonauts, foreign-born, technically skilled entrepreneurs who travel back and forth between Silicon Valley and their own countries, seek their fortune in distant lands by launching companies far from established centers of skills and technology. This is an opportunity for small and middle cities like this one. In her Argonaut metaphor, Saxenian shows the way engineers who come to Silicon Valley from China, India, Taiwan, or Israel were creating entrepreneurial networks, transforming what was once a brain drain into brain circulation, and allowing Silicon Valley to deepen its managerial, technical, and professional know-how. Allow me to stress this link between migration and innovation. Skilled individuals, and I will come back to this one, are the new Argonauts. And skilled individuals are our clients. That's why what we are producing in universities. Migration is an opportunity, a challenge, and higher education will be the incubator to gain these opportunities. Those entrepreneurs were made in a global university street, made of segments of courses in different countries, built on internationalized courses and disciplines. Today, higher education is becoming a global commodity, with a strong focus on providing solutions to new types of clients, users, and partners around the world. Our customers are no longer only local students, although local students are still part of our core mission. In addition to the challenge of delivering courses at a long distance through e-learning, be-learning, or the MOOCs, there is this challenge to manage diversity in our campus. The so-called Think Global, Act Local also applies to the universities, but the Think Local to Act Global also applies. Our mission is simultaneously to shape, to deliver, and to gain human capital, serving a diverse population in situ, as opposed to a more uniform one in the past. Local versus global, monocultural versus multicultural, diversity versus super diversity. Super diversity in our days includes differential legal status and their concomitant conditions, asylum seekers, refugees, even illegal migrants, divergent labor market experiences, discrete configurations of gender and age, patterns of spatial distribution and mixed local area responses by service providers and residents. The dynamic interactions of these variables is what we mean by super diversity. That's what we need to learn to manage. Are universities prepared to this opportunity? And by universities, I mean the whole institution. Students, academics, researchers, technicians, all personnel, but also their portfolio of ideas, concepts, teaching materials and courses. Are we prepared? The first challenge will be to include the newcomers and their descendants in the higher education system. Education has been the basis of migrant integration into European societies. It's not only provide adequate skills to be successful in the labor market, but also contributes to the active participation of migrants by communicating the culture and values of the societies they settle in. Integration is made easy in the campus by the process of creating enduring networks of human and social capital. In the complex knowledge societies in which we live, the need to acquire skills to adapt to our changing environments are to generate innovative solutions, reinforce the importance of education. The main path to social mobility is and will be acquiring certain educational credentials as they increase the likelihood of finding quality employment and improving material well-being. But credentials alone without social capital are worthless. Universities seems to be the place where to link the human capital to the social capital. This is a new challenge for us, how to promote an inclusive social capital among our local and foreign students, how to promote a policy of inclusion for all. Employers, students, and administrators who manage international student mobility programs at higher education institutions perceive a connection between study abroad and graduate employability. Study abroad is not worth noteworthy for students. But what about for receiving countries or institutions? Global demand for higher education is expanding. In developed countries, educational institutions look to international students who are often charged higher tuition fees to ease budgetary constraints or to following negative demographic trends and financial disengagement from the state. And as it's the case of my own universities. Universities adapt themselves to a new era, to new users and consumers. One of the recent challenges of in Europe has been the need to answer the so-called refugee crisis and to provide them access to higher education. Let me just say something. It's not a refugee and it's not a crisis. This is a changing in the way we see the world. It's not only about refugees. It's a new pattern of migration we are facing in, and we need to face this challenge. The massive influx of refugees, asylum seekers, or migrants to Europe, primarily from Syria, but also from Eritrea, Libya, Afghanistan, the Kurdish territories, and Iraq, numbering in the hundreds of thousands, must be added to already significant numbers trying over the years to move from Africa to Europe. The motivations for these massive migrations are both political and economic. Refugees are escaping terrorism, civil war, and poverty in the countries they come from. Many refugees and asylum seekers have gained university entrance qualification in their home countries or had commenced or completed a degree program there. In addition, and this is where education enters the equation, refugees from Syria, Iraq, and the Kurdish areas are perceived to be better educated and therefore potentially easier to integrate into a society and the labor market in receiving countries. In the current competition for talent, these refugees are not only seen as victims and a cost factor for the local economy, but in the long run also welcome new talent for the knowledge economy. As stated before, integration through education is very important. Important for migrants. When it comes to integrating refugees, education plays a central role. A large percentage of the refugees arriving in Europe are younger than 25. In other words, an age when education is most needed. Four main areas should be prioritized. And we've heard about these areas already. Recognizing skills and qualification. And this challenge is our bureaucracy. How to recognize prior diplomas without papers? Well, in a digital era, there is different ways to do it without papers. There is a trace that is already in the World Wide Web that we can pick up. And there is this new possibility that is big data. Let's have big data working for us in this kind of areas. Ensuring academic qualification, language and subject-related preparation, and supporting integration at universities and cities. In different countries, including Portugal, student academics, universities and governments are beginning to explore ways to integrate young academic refugees, students, and also researchers, scholars and teachers into the educational system. Refugees who are potentially qualified for university study arrive with a range of language skills and abilities. Precisely determining what these abilities are, whether they qualify them for study and where support is needed, facilitates integration into regular degree programs and contributes to academic success. This needs a cooperation, not a Finnish cooperation in between universities, but a European cooperation at a European level, because some of these refugees will move. They will arrive in Italy, and then they will start a degree in Italy, and they will move to Finland, and then they will move again to Germany, and eventually they will return to Syria one day. Since most students will lack appropriate credentials, universities can, through testing and other means, determine appropriate placement for students. Language and cultural training should be a priority. All of this requires the commitment of human and financial resources. Well, in the presence of the representative of the Minister of Education, let me say this is an area like the army or the health system. It needs to be over budget, because otherwise you cannot answer immediately to the questions they are posing us. So there's, if you don't need enough budget to prepare these programs in advance, even if you are not receiving immediately the refugee students, then you will fail to integrate them, because you will delay this process for 1 or 2 years. And we need that money already now. Let me now turn a little bit, five seconds, to the Portuguese situation. Portuguese higher education is split into polytechnics and universities, and we have both a private and a public system. Portugal has been a destination for immigrants, descendants of immigrants, and international students since long ago. This table is just to be sure that you are still alive and you can read the small numbers there. The number of foreign students choosing to study in Portugal is rapidly increasing. But most of them are coming from Portuguese-speaking countries. If you look to those numbers, you will see a jump in the last numbers available, that are 2012. And from those, around 10,000 students came to study in Portuguese universities. The example, when we contrast the Portuguese case and the Finnish case, you will see that we were very similar for a period, but then recently there was this jump in the numbers, and I can explain this jump through, the other slide is about the outflow, so the inflow and the outflow of students. I can give you some insights in the Portuguese situation through the Coimbra University case. The University of Coimbra, my university, is a Portuguese public higher education with more than 700 years. It was established in the 13th century, and it was the first and only Portuguese-speaking university till the early 20th century. So it was a monopolist higher institution, and that was good for that period. The University of Coimbra has affirmed its position over the years with a mix of tradition, contemporaneity, and innovation. Presently, in the University of Coimbra, there are more than 4,600 students from 97 nationalities and academic research and technical staff from 24 different nationalities. From those, 1,000 students are exchange students. Coimbra has always been a very open university and has become the alma mater for the elites of the Portuguese-speaking countries. But since years ago, has this policy to attract Portuguese language students. So, for instance, today Coimbra accepts with no further exams the validity of the access exams for Brazilian universities. So Coimbra is one more university in the total of the Brazilian universities. And we reserve at least every year 600 places for Brazilian graduate students, first-year Brazilian graduate students. This means, and my colleague Marcia will explain this a little bit later today, this brings the number of Brazilian students in Coimbra to around 3,000, and it's the biggest Brazilian university outside Brazil. Beside this group, we are also offering different programs in English, so different programs, graduated and postgraduated courses in English, and since a few years ago also to Chinese students that wanted to learn Portuguese. So if you look to our website, we have a Portuguese, a Chinese, and an English website. So trying to attract these Chinese students. Last words to talk about the International Student Lounge in Coimbra that was built 3 years ago. It's the Casa da Lusofonia, and it's a kind of one-stop shop for Portuguese-speaking international students where they can meet, they can exchange their experiences, but at the same time they can face the border police, the International Relations Department, all in one place. So it has been a good practice to share. So one place for these students to be all together. The creation of this multicultural space is part of the internationalization strategy of the University of Coimbra, which has the Portuguese language as the center of its internationalization. Facing human capital challenges of the 20th century is to face a multidimensional and complex world. That's our challenge for the future. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much for your insightful presentation. I had a request from the audience that you should stand up and maybe stretch a bit. So let's do that then. Yes, hands up, feet on the side. Okay. Okay. Then let's continue. But before we open the mic for the audience, we have two invited remarks from Finnish scholars. So first, we will have the comments by Dr. Anja Heikkinen, who is a professor of education in the School of Education at the University of Tampere. Her research and teaching focuses mainly on adult, vocational, and higher education from historical, cultural, and gender perspectives. Currently, she is heading the research group Equality and Planetary Justice in Adult, Vocational, and Higher Education. So please. Anja.
So good afternoon, everybody. Good afternoon, everybody, and I'm very grateful that I was given the opportunity to come and say a few words. Thank you, Pedro, for the presentation. I got it quite in the last minute, so I haven't had so much time to reflect on that. And I understand your background is mainly from sociology and economics, and maybe my points or what I'm saying is coming from the background of being in education, and but anyway, I don't know how you take it, but or the audience how you take my comments, but let's discuss about that. So maybe the first thing when I was listening to you is that you were presenting, and it's the same with the Finnish discussion. I think we are looking at this so-called crisis or problems in a very Eurocentric way. So we are more looking at it, what is the effects, what are the problems, or what does it mean for Europe, how Europe should react. So I think this is very typical, and maybe this is behind my comments mainly, that and I mainly my thinking is now about refugees, because I think migration is slightly a different thing than refugees. So my title is, or I would say, it's a question of sharing and caring. First, maybe some points which I found interesting quickly in your presentation was this the points of superdiversity and globalization in higher education. We have these concepts of multiculturalism and so on and about the diversity, but I think that this concept of superdiversity goes into the direction that basically we are all different. We are all unique. And what does it mean if we take it seriously? That that we cannot group people too much, because still the concept of multiculturalism is putting people in boxes. And I think that maybe this is in the direction of moving beyond the concept of multiculturalism. And this responsiveness of this cyber-diverse population in higher education. And then another thing which I think was important for me in your presentation was that instead of looking at only from the problem perspective and crisis perspective, to think about the promise and potential of migrants. But what do we mean by this? Promise and potential might be different among us. And then I don't know if I'm so happy with that you are referring to migrants as a solution to European stagnation. Economic stagnation and the kind of the demographic situation and so on. Maybe this is a positive thing, but you can also question. And then this attracting migrant students, that is very common and important in our countries in Europe, opening higher education. And I think you were emphasizing, especially in the end, that opening to the Lusophone world. And for us, it's a slightly challenging, because we cannot open up the country to the Finnish-speaking world. It is rather narrow, or rather limited, this world which we can open up. But I think the important things in discussing is to make a difference between mobility, migration, and refugee. And you were mentioning quite often in your talk not making so much a difference between these concepts, that it's important to build a strategy to increase human global mobility and to gain from that mobility. And that there shouldn't be no restrictions to human mobility. So I think this is quite, we don't need in nowhere in the world, in universities, we don't need arguments for that anymore. Because mobility is one of the priorities in the strategies of higher education institutions. It is a strategic element of not only universities, educational systems, all in all. It's not only universities. Mobility is considered as an individual, an organization, a national tool for progress and for success in terms of business economy. When we look at the concepts which are and the discourse in European higher education policies, what is behind the Bologna process? What is behind the European research area? It's all about mobility. It's about being mobile. But migration is already a slightly a different concept. And I don't know, these are not official definitions, but just to show that it might be important to make a difference, that migration can be seen or considered as an intended or unintended process of relocation, habitation, employment of individuals and certain groups. And often we are talking about, at least I think in the European context, we are referring to that from the work migration perspective, how people are moving to work in different countries and so on. It's mainly a work-related phenomenon, this migration. But then when we talk about refugee, I think it is another thing, because it is a flee, it is a displacement. As you mentioned, there are political, economic reasons. There is war, there are environmental catastrophes or something which are behind why people are displaced and they are fleeing for getting protection and residence permission in other country or region. And I think these are different concepts, and they are also leading to a different understanding of how higher education, maybe I have slightly also difficulties with this higher education concept, whether we mean by that universities or polytechnics, because I have a certain understanding of academy and academic education and academic values, perhaps, and therefore that might be slightly different if you compare with the polytechnics, which are more vocationally oriented and maybe closer to the promoting industry and economy directly. So I think this should be made more clearer. And maybe the most concerning thing perhaps is to me was in the vocabulary in the presentation was so much related to economic terms, and not only economic, because economy is, of course, economics is the basis of our lives, but a certain kind of business economic approach that it's important for employability, for material well-being, and there is a competition for talent, and therefore we are looking at the refugees from the potential of welcoming them as talented, an addition to the knowledge economy. So when we are talking about this human capital and innovation competitiveness, are we referring to the mobility concept or to the migration concept or to the refugee concept? And I think it should make a difference. Are we just interested about pooling excellence in the higher education? I'm afraid that it looks quite much like that from my own university's perspective. I think it's good as far as we can pull the best, if we can pick up the best among the refugees or from the migrants. And it is important if we can promote, if we can internalize in such a way that it's promoting our position in the globalization of higher education. And as you mentioned, that instead of brain drain, we talk about brain circulation, that higher education and these highly educated people, it's question about a commodity. That is the main function, that how do they increase the competitiveness of different industries and economies. So I'm not so sure if this is not, you could also call that nationalism. Because it's about improving the position of the national education systems or national industries or economies. That this, seeing even the refugee phenomenon as one possibility for promoting the market situation of higher education, the competition between higher education institutions, if this is the main way of how we should look at the especially the refugee situation. So what I'm questioning that is it, or does it also belong to higher education, at least in the academy, that this situation is also setting us in front of new questions or new dilemmas, which are not only ours, but which are planetary problems. What's going on is planetary. It's about the whole humankind. It's not only about the humankind. It's also about the non-humans. It's about what we are doing to the planet. And these are just kind of indicators. They are symptoms. And therefore, this is an opportunity for us to look at these symptoms, to look at what is going on on the planet. And the question about the basic, our Western or European values, which about equality, justice, and so on, What are we? Are we really serious about them? What do they mean nowadays? So I think that even though I have nothing against the concept of people should have the right to move or have the freedom of movement, so we have to ask. It's not enough. What do we mean by that? Freedom to move, and also you can say, can you have a freedom of not to move? What are the values which are underlying the opportunities and whose values, what values are underlying these conceptions of promoting mobility or migration? I don't know if we want to promote refugee, but so whose values they are. When you think about that, we have the you mentioned the similar syllabus, similar methods, standardized curricula. Whose curricula are they? Where do they come from? I think the standardization and convergence of higher education is not happening on equal terms on the globe. There are certain... I think it is still the European hegemony. It's still the European colonialism. So... If we are seeing it only as a positive thing that all the people from the different other parts of the globe are coming to the European and a certain countries or university, is this really progress? Why cannot they develop their higher education in their own contexts? Why don't we go there? So I think these questions we should ask as well. As I said, we could and we should ask together with those people who are with us here to ask them about from the planetary perspective, where do you come from? What would be a good way of living on this planet? What should we do together in order to improve the conditions of humans on the different parts, to improve their livelihood, their well-being, their safety? And to think about what does it mean also, I mean, what is the exploitation of the non-human reality, animals, resources on the earth? How is it related to these problems? Are we doing it in a fair way? So why do people desire and why should they move? And what costs and consequences? So... an alternative way of looking at what higher education institutions, at least academy, how it could react is to take this as an opportunity and take it seriously in the curriculum, in the contents of our courses, the way in which we are organizing our studies, how we are opening up to the society outside, in order to discuss these important issues. Where are the places where these issues are discussed if they are not discussed in the academy, if they are not discussed in higher education? Where are the places? So I think this is a radical challenge to the universities and to academy, really to, in a way, not just to think about how to promote economic competitiveness, but to, I don't know, really to critically problematize the way in which we are what we are discussing and what we are doing in the universities. And I think our refugees and migrants are very important partners in this discussion. They are not somebody to whom we are doing something, but they are important partners in this discussion. So thank you.
Thank you very much for your extensive comments. Really interesting. Professor Goyes will have a chance to respond to your comments soon, but before that, let's hear the comments also from Dr. Tuija Saresma, who is a docent of cultural studies at the Research Center for Contemporary Culture at the University of Jyväskylä. Currently, she studies the experiences and intersections of migration in a research project, Narratives of Mobility and Belonging. She's also the PI of a multidisciplinary research project, Arts of Belonging, Affectivity and Materiality of Homing. Her current research interests include affects, mobility, migration, intersectionality, and populist rhetoric, as well as hate speech in social media. Welcome, Tuija.
So good afternoon, everybody. I'm sorry I have a bit of a flu, but I'll try to talk anyway. I wish to thank the Professor Pedro Gois for your informative and encouraging keynote. I also thank the organizers for the invitation. I was asked to comment the keynote from the viewpoint of a researcher. In my current research project on narratives of migration and belonging, I concentrate on intersecting mobilities. I will get back to this concept soon. Let me begin with an autobiographical fragment on my personal experience of being a temporary migrant in higher education. Listening to Assistant Professor Pedro Gois and how the University of Coimbra facilitates its numerous migrant students evoked personal memories about being an academic migrant myself. 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to work as a visiting researcher at the University of Tilburg in the Netherlands as a part of our Academy of Finland-funded research project, Populism as Movement and Rhetoric. Already while preparing my 3-month visit there, my email inquiries were replied in a very professional way. I was given a temporary email address well in advance and all kinds of practical information about Tilburg School of Humanities. Once I got into the office, I was warmly welcomed by the staff, including the head of the department. One of the colleagues even brought me a chocolate muffin, which I will never forget. I realized that having the financial support and being a European Union citizen made me very privileged in my experiences. So back to the Professor Pedro Gois' presentation. He expressed his concern about the restrictions that are imposed to hinder mobility all over Europe. I share this anxiety, especially after the incidents of autumn 2015 that are referred to as the refugee crisis, colliding with the rise of populist right-wing parties across Europe and the boom of xenophobic atmosphere consequently. I could not agree more on the fact that Europe is indeed a continent of migrations, of migrants. I especially appreciate his emphasis on migrations in plural. The emphasis of my research project is on the diverse experiences of migrants, drawing from analysis of global mobility, post-colonial critique, racialization, and studies of the gendered experiences of migration. My project draws from the differences between various systems, patterns, and statuses of migration. I suggest that migration should always be understood as a diverse phenomenon, sometimes a threat and sometimes as encouraged, sometimes forced, other times voluntary. Also, in the context of migrants in higher education, the concept of intersecting mobilities enables analyzing the geographical, gendered, ethnic, age-related, class or economic differences, and perceiving the varying experiences of emigrants, immigrants, expats, and refugees. What is more, education itself is another focal intersecting power hierarchy. The context of higher education necessarily presupposes access to education, which is a privilege as such. I appreciate Professor Pedro Gois' discussion on diversity and what Steven Vertovec calls superdiversity. I absolutely agree that it is not enough to discuss diversity only in terms of ethnicity. It is indeed the dynamics of variables such as, and I quote, differential legal statuses, divergent labour market experiences, discrete configurations of gender and age, patterns of spatial distribution, end of quote, and so on, that Vertebeck refers to as superdiversity. The concept of superdiversity has been criticized because it fails to recognize that societies have always been diverse. It also underestimates or perhaps even dismisses the workings of power in the negotiation of diversity. I thus prefer the concept of intersectionality in analyzing how people are positioned differently based on certain social categories. I believe that the question of power is essential in determining who are included and who are excluded, also in the context of higher education. This emphasis on power is something that I slightly missed in Professor Goy's presentation. And in the following excerpt, for example, the negotiation of power does not exist, and I quote in its entirety. Universities are neutral conveners, assemblers of talent, and unmatched idea factories where the passion, creativity, and idealism of great minds, young and old alike, gender neutral, race dispassionate, religion disinterested, can be applied to problem solving and advancing our societal and economic well-being, end of quote. This does sound a bit idealistic to me, or alternatively, perhaps sarcastic. In the ideal university, the differences would, of course, not affect at all. In reality, in this real world we are living now, I'm afraid they do. When Professor Goyce discusses the mobility era as a system where clients, users, and partners become the co-designers, and I quote, migrants are already a part of the national educational system where, and the quote continues, students can start their graduate courses in one continent and finish their post-graduation courses in another one, where academics frequently move to teach in different countries, to present papers in conferences and seminars, and to participate in workshops, end of quote. I need to ask, which groups of students? Who are these academics? It is hardly all the academics in the world. Perhaps it is only the most privileged ones. And down memory lane again. At the time I was a student at the 1990s, it was relatively rare to go abroad as an exchange student, even in the welfare state of Finland. I never did, which I regret now. Yet it was quite easy for me to later to move as a temporal academic migrant to the Netherlands as a white EU citizen with a sufficient knowledge in English. Despite this, I can hardly recognize myself in the metaphor of a new Argonaut, sailing back and forth the academic Silicon Valleys and my home country, and even harder it is to imagine that students and academics from all over the world could participate in this global adventure. For those less privileged, even basic education is hard to achieve. So I wish to end here emphasizing, following again Professor Vedro Goyce, that it is even or especially in this particular context of migration and higher education, it's really relevant to talk about, and I quote, clients, users, partners, about customers, and as education as a global commodity and human capital, that is, as a subject of merchandise. This highlights the benefits and especially the economic aspects of education, the importance of profit in the global knowledge capitalism, and as the inevitable flip side of profit-making, the unequal distribution of economic resources in entering the academia and the hardening competition for the decreasing resources inside academia that affect all from students to professors. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments as well. Okay, then I would like to invite you, the three of you maybe in front. You can take a seat on the sofa. We could first give a few words. We would like to hear maybe some responses from Professor Goyce, if you wish, for these comments before we ask the audience to step in.
Yeah, it is. Well, thank you very much. It was very, very, okay, very challenging comment. In a way, I'm too idealistic. In the opposite way, maybe I'm not idealistic enough. Well, there is an expression, you cannot stop the wind with your hands. And the free movement will come. That's something we need to integrate in our challenges and strategies for the future. It's impossible to stop it. It was impossible to stop it in the past. And we realize since the 90s till now, well, 20-something years, and a lot of you are now movers in Europe. Now, 20 years ago, it was very expensive to travel. Now we have a Ryanair. So people will travel fast. And, well, before it was once a year, now it's once a month. So things are changing. Let's use an example. Now, last year I was in China. China is it's a country. Two countries if we count Taiwan, but let's say it's a country. Well, they are expecting for the next 40 years 500 million internal migrants. So there will be 500 million people moving inside China. So half of the population will move. Why? Because they can. If they couldn't, they will be immobilized in somewhere in a rural area. If they can, they move. What are the challenges for us now? First, the legal status. So we don't move, people don't move because of the legal status. Second one, it's money. They don't have money enough to move. So those two examples were very good. But they are examples from the past, not for the future. Why can't we stop the wind with our hands? Because in the future, very short future, everything will change very deep. Let me use another example. It's the example of Nigeria in Africa. Do you know how big is Nigeria in terms of population? It's 180 million people. Do you know the forecast for Nigeria in 2015? 500 million. Do you know the forecast for 2090? Almost 1,000 million. Do you think we can stop those movements? Well, let's act or react. That's a choice we can do in the next 30 years. But don't try to stop those boats that will come from Africa with your hands. It's not possible to do it. Let's prepare ourselves for these migrant people that will come for a while and will come back again and will circulate in between our countries and will establish new businesses and universities and so on in Africa. But don't try to stop the wind. It's impossible. Look at Europe. Can you imagine us all with 70 years old trying to fight migrants in our borders? We don't want to do that. We need to prepare ourselves. That's my point. Can we do that in with some preparation in advance? We should. Let's open a little bit. Let's change, of course, let's change our syllabus. Let's adapt our syllabus to our students. What is something that you said that I recognize? It's north-oriented, the way we teach. So let's learn something. Once we know already that, let's include the south vision in our syllabus. We need to do it. It's not a question of if we will do it. It's when. And that's my point.
Okay, yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with preparing something, even though I think, for example, what happened last autumn was I don't know, more or less something which was very difficult to prepare in advance, or I mean...
We were keep telling people, they will come. There was a war in Syria for 5 years. Yeah. Look at the camps in Greece, look at the camps in... So we were expecting that.
Yeah, yes, yeah, but I mean, that is... Because I think it's a problem perhaps is with the... We are discussing at different levels, in the different dimensions that... because I'm somehow speaking about what higher education institutions or what universities or academies should do in a more, in a broader sense. I mean, there are many ways in which to prepare our own students or our own citizens or, I mean, with ever, whom we are in interaction to become more aware. We are educating experts into the society. They are in the leading positions. They are the future elite in the societies. So they are the ones who can do something. They can intervene. They are there in the tables of where in industry, in economy, in politics. They are the ones who are discussing, negotiating, making decisions. So I think it is not only a question of how do we, in a very somehow in a very short, just think about, I'm not even quite sure what you mean by how we could prepare, because if we think about there are big coming with the all the language variation, for example, now, how can we really in practice prepare for that? That is quite it's a long-term issue. It's not something which you can do immediately, but there might be something else. But I'm looking at this question in a broader sense of what is, how the position, the role, the function of academy or university and university education, how it should be reconsidered in this situation, and not just in a kind of immediate reaction, maybe a emergency reaction, instead of not reflecting and thinking about what it is about. I mean, going deeper into the what is at stake there. And I think your view about the mobility, that the cheap mobility and easy mobility, is also a bit idealistic if we take seriously, as I think we should, the realities about the amount of natural resources, energy, the problems of what we are doing to the environment, the pollution, emissions, and so on. Is it really so that we will become more and more mobile? Or is it so that, in fact, we have to reduce our mobility in order to be able to continue our lives here on the planet? So I'm not so sure about these forecasts. I agree with you with this crisis and the problems which are there. But again, should we do something else about the African countries, sub-Saharan African countries, and to work with them in such a way that this future wouldn't happen, instead of just preparing for this crisis future? So I think this is the question. Yeah.
I think that's a deep one. Professor, if you want to comment any short comments there still, or we can open for the audience as well. I'm not sure if this can be heard. Yes? Okay, we have this funny mic to be thrown around. Let's see how this works. So let's open the stage for the audience. I can see one question there. Very, very... Let's take the challenge. So let's try to throw this mic. Maybe you can... So you can just freely throw it. And maybe not like one throw up.
Hello. All right, thank you very much. My name is Isaac. I'm coming from the University of Eastern Finland. I'm originally from Ghana. I don't remember the names, but you made very good points, which from the economic point of view, it is safe to be an argument. But when you look at it in totality, in realistic, I think Madame in the middle is making very good points. Because if you look at students coming from sub-Saharan Africa, moving always to Europe to come and study, it's a form of colonization. Why don't we develop universities back home? So students don't only move from Africa to Europe, but also Europe to Africa. I can tell you real life stories. You have a lot of students studying in Finland after PhD. Some students are even cleaners. Then what is the essence of educating yourself? If the knowledge you acquire doesn't tell you to go back home to do something and you want to be a cleaner, work in the kitchen, work as a newspaper distributor. And so in a more broader sense, I would love what she's saying is that from the higher education perspective, let's develop universities back home so students don't have to move to come and study here, because after studies, you must do something. And in places like Finland, the opportunities is very limited. But then if you educate yourself back home, you are aware of the situations, you are able to improve the societies, and people will not even find a need of moving from Africa to Europe. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I am Maysim. I am one from the refugee people in here in Finland. My home country, it's from Iraq. And I think everybody here know what is the refugee situation in here. Right, we are have war and we have really bad situation in there. We have corruption and everything, but also we have people, they are education and they are want to continue in here. But I am in here from 1 year, but still we are like suffering. How can we go inside the universities, especially for the, like I have a medical background. I am studying in my country 3 years medical schools and 2 years in Ukraine. But still, my study, it's in English, but still in here we have this problem. This is the Finnish language. My questions. And here in Finland, everybody he speak English language so well. And I think it's like second language for the people in here. But still, we can't apply only if we have Finnish language. If we can apply in the medical universities, and it's not only in medicals, but in other universities, it's depend on our background. Some of them, it's like me, I have all my degree, I have document, I have everything in here, but still, no university he can accept me because we have this Finnish problem language. In other countries, they have two lines for studying. Like Ukraine, they are have two lines. You can study in Russian language or in own home language, or you can study in English language. And beside this English language, you can study the own language for this country. But this is only for studying in Ukraine. But now in here, we are refugee. This country, we are thankful from this country because it's like open the hand for us and give us the safety life, give us the home, give us the possibility to start the life. And we have, like we think now, and we hope we have a future. But still, the situation, it's too tight for us. We can't do more. We're waiting some decision from the education ministry. We're waiting for some people. They are really taking care from us. We have too much power. We have too much opportunity. We have too much energy to serve this country. But still, we can't get anything. We're waiting to get us some hope to continue. But still, nothing happened. I think I am the first people in here that are contact with Jyväskylä University to be really to get something in here from the people. They are really just first people came to Finland and they are want to continue the study, because until I come to here, until 2015, I am study. But what can I do? The problem in Iraq, it's really, really bad. And I have two children also. The father is killed in Iraq, and this, it's not only to talking about myself, this situation for most of the refugee people. So we should have some attention from education ministry in here. We are also human. We want to continue We want to continue the life and the future and the hopes. We are not like coming to Finland or Germany or England or any country only to sitting and take benefit or something. We want to do something. I think you the Finland there should be government, education ministry, any ministry there should be to make attention for these people, because really they are want also to serve this country. And there should be to use these people to serve this country, not only let them sitting and they are thinking only what they are should to do. And I think as I see now the all the system, it's too slow in here. If you have something, it's too slow in here. We should be waiting too long time. And we lost the age, we lost the time, we lost so much things. So the refugee also, they are want to do something, not only sitting in home. I don't know what the new procedure, but we hope it's really soon. Or like now we, if the problem it's only language, so get us some really some courses for Finnish language and advanced courses, something to help us to move on, not only standing in the same. So thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments as well. I think let's take a short break and offer the microphone for the Ministry of Education. I think maybe you want to say a few words for the response, and then we can...
Since you posed the question to the Ministry of Education and Culture, and I'm here, so I feel the responsibility for answering to your question, at least trying to. It's not... I also wish that we had several official languages in Finland, but we have only Finnish and Swedish and sign language and Sami language, and those are the languages that we have to take into account when we are planning our higher education system. Okay. Finland actually is, I think, the second largest, or the second country in Europe which offers... English language master's courses after Netherlands. So Netherlands is the biggest one, and then after that comes Finland. But it doesn't help if you don't have the bachelor degree already in your pocket. So I agree with you that in the university level we should have more English language programs also at bachelor level. But then again, we have another sector, higher education sector, universities of applied sciences and polytechnics, which also offer a lot of English language tuition. But there are certain areas, like you mentioned, medicine, and some other areas where we don't have provision in English. But the ministry is not, I would say, don't want to be inactive. So we want to be active, and that is why we have set up this network of SIMHE, so three universities and three universities of applied sciences to start the work. And we have to identify first where we need this English language provision, so what kind of programs do we have to have or do we want to have, and then start planning tuition according to that. But like it was mentioned here, so everything has happened so fast, and there hasn't been time enough to react in a proper way. But, of course, there will not be a kind of 100% perfect situation. There will always be some areas where we do not have programs in English. We are a small country, 5.5 million inhabitants, and hard times economically. So even if we wanted to, we cannot do everything. But this is a promise that we try as far as possible.
Thank you. And, okay, just a
short comment. Yeah. I know it's like I know you want to try, but specific the medical in all the world, it's in English. And even in here, I check all the universities. They are use the medical books. It's in English. The reference medical books. It's in English. And all the people, all the students, they are study the English books in medical Finnish university in here. So we need only some way, some attention, some chance to get us in this university. Especially we have background for that. It's not all the, like, I don't mean it's all the system you should be, it's in English. But accept us in the university, depend on our background. Some test if you want, it's okay also for us, but not tight us. It's only you should be speak Finnish. If we contact with the people, we speak Finnish quickly. But if you only sitting, we can't speak Finnish, never.
Thank you. Now maybe our panel wants to
respond. So the medicine degrees are always a challenge for receiving countries. Let me tell you a story. 10 years ago, a little bit more, we received in Portugal, in 1 year, 100,000 Ukrainians. And some of them were doctors. So after a while, because we were not prepared, it took a while to start these programs, we initiate a program of recognition of diplomas. So 1 year course to learn Portuguese and to learn the Western way of doing medicine. So 1 year. After 1 year, there was an exam by this professional association of doctors in Portugal. And that is fair. But the questions were about tropical diseases. So after 1 year, we prepared them to work in Portugal. But the exam were about tropical disease. 99 in 100 failed. And this was a message. We don't want you to be doctors in our country. But of course, there was a social reaction to that, and we adapt and change. So those 99 doctors, some of them are still in Portugal. Most of them have migrated to Germany or to England to be doctors in another place, well paid than in Portugal. And that's still fair. Because people are mobile. What have we learned from that? Not so much. In the recent flow of refugees, there are some doctors. We are not prepared. You need 1 year to learn Portuguese and medicine school, and then we'll see. And that's your problem, and I really agree with you. We can't stop your life with bureaucracies. We can promote a strategy to integrate you immediately, and then on the way we can test you, we can try to provide you with some skills you need to perform your profession in here. We can't wait for 5 years, 10 years or more. It's impossible, and we need to realize that in every European country, not only for medicine but also for medicine students. For our colleague upstairs. Well, the woman in the middle is always the wise woman. And sure, she's wiser than me. What I'm trying to challenge you is to think a world, at least a Europe, without barriers. And I want to challenge you now, because I was an Erasmus student. I learned to live in a European without borders. But maybe my children will need to have a passport again. And that's something I don't want to tell him. Once upon a time, there was a free movement in Europe. And now we have this border and this border and this border because of the refugees. There's no sense to answer to our small children. There were people needing protection, and what we did, we close the doors. That's something we can't teach. That's something we cannot move to the next generation. We need to solve the problem now. And if it's about legal status, let's change legal status. I'm a sociologist. A refugee is not different from a migrant. Sorry, it's not. It's a different legal status. Some of them will become normally integrated. Some of them will return. Some of them will move to another country. That's life. They are not significantly different from migrants. They need the same inputs, the same language courses, the same integration programs. And they need more than the others, protection. That's something we can add to the previous projects, protection. And in some cases, some help, because they are traumatized people, because they came from wars. But let's face the reality. If Turkey decided to open the doors again tomorrow, next week we will have another flow of refugees, migrants. I don't know what to call them. If it's not tomorrow, it will be next year. Or Libya, which will allow people to passing through. Or Morocco. So let's face the reality. Let's adapt today. Even if today it's not today, it's not tomorrow, it's next year. But let's start now to have plans for this contingent that will arrive.
Okay.
Please.
I'm really glad that you brought up the question of language here, because I think that it's when intersectionality as a sort of theory was first developed, it was about gender and class and ethnicity. But I think that language is a very focal or central thing. It's a kind of a very, it's an act of power indeed. And I always thought that I was like a bit of an underdog, because my English is not as fluent as the of those who have been really exchange students and so on. But I actually never thought about that from your perspective, that in Finland it's still a very Finnish university, and we do read books in English, but we teach it mostly in Finnish, and that's a problem. So I think that if we need concrete preparations, that's one thing that we should really do.
Yeah, I would have 2 points. Not 3 points. 2 points. Sorry, this is insider's Finnish joke. I have 3 points. One thing about this, how to cope, well, maybe they are related, that we talk about somehow about the world as it would be like just a playing ground. You just jump from one country into another. And we have a very Western European concept of the state, the nation state, and the regulated nation state with the human rights and regulated societies and so on. But the whole world is not like that. So I think it makes a difference if somebody is coming from somewhere or moving somewhere. It's not just like jumping from one country to another. And there are good points in that. I mean, that Finland is a very regulated society. It's a safe country. It is kind of why, I mean, at least looks at the surface. You never know what happens if things go in a certain direction. But it's very regulated. And that is also a problem. We don't have a flexibility. And I think that this comes to a question of, I would say, disobedience to regulations. That even though we have a Minister of Education, do we always have to go and ask from the Minister of Education, and do we get permission to do something? Or is it possible that we have the autonomy in universities, even the teachers have autonomy to how they are organizing their work? So would there be some more flexible intermediary ways of coping with things? Not to have an absolute legal permission to act as a medical doctor in Finland, but still to use the expertise which you have, and somehow during you are here, you don't know whether you will be here for a long time or a shorter time. But I mean, still we are good in English. I think we could find solutions that you can somehow, I mean, continue a human decent life. That if you are, that's your profession, that's your area, you could somehow live with that here. And I don't think it is only about money, because as you said, you don't want to, and I know it from others, it's you get a very small benefit. It's almost ridiculous, but still, it's not a question of money that much, but can you work and can you do something that is meaningful? You also want to do, but I think it belongs to everybody normally, somehow a sound human situation that you want to be useful. You want to be something for others. You don't just want to be kind of that you are maintained, that you are just kept alive, but you want to be meaningful to the others. And each of us, we want to find or we want to have our own way of being useful. Maybe it's driving a car or a taxi, but maybe for you it would be more useful to use it somehow in a medical, some medical related work. And that could be one step then to move forward, to go further in a more regulated legal solution. So I think that we could be more flexible and more open and to share the situation of these newcomers and find flexible solutions in the way in which we are organizing our own work in universities and programs and so on.
Thank you. Sorry. I think there's a few questions still. We have only like 5 minutes left. So we could take two quick questions, and then we unfortunately need to move forward. I think there's been a hand up many times already, so can we?
Hi, just to comment on what she was talking about and what you have been talking about, I think there is a gap in the language training program. It is basically just for survival purposes. I've gone through that program, and you know there wasn't anything for me after then. You know, so I think that the most important thing right now is developing a language program that meets the professional needs of skilled immigrants. So that's my input, yeah. And it's also part of my project that I'm working on, which is also there.
Yeah. Hello, my name is Ahmed. I'm sorry, I don't want to be negative about the Ministry of Education. I have been 1 year and a half in Finland as a refugee. Since I come to Finland, I try to prove myself as I graduate from Baghdad, an IT programmer, and I have some information about communication and these things. I have English skill, and I have so much friend exchange students. So they say, like, you have good English, so you can apply. And then I go to the university, I give my degree, it's from the embassy, and there's everything like I'm exchange student. And she said, you must have the 4 Finnish social number, or you must come have a visa. And then I say, like, okay, I'm a refugee, and this time and there's no problem that I can, like, fit in. So after, like, 1 year, I meet Professor Anya. She gave me the chance to be part of program action groups. Let's work together, me and... And we are trying to help the immigrants like me who they want to come to university and acting like student and feel like they are student. So they have the vision in the future about what happened in here in the university. So I have the 4 numbers, who is the Finnish social number. And then the immigration sent me the passport that you can use. So I think like I have passport, I have 4 number, like, okay, I'm student, a master degree now, I will go. And I go to the same employee. And he say, like, okay, can you come other day, please? Because he wants something to block it, but he don't know what he should. And then he said, okay, your 4 numbers is for short time, not long time. So it's like, I laugh, and then, like, can I have my job? Because he will find any excuse. That's the problem. Like, the system must be edit, as you say. The time has changed, and we are coming. So I hope that it helped. Thank you.
It's just to give the experience of the University of Coimbra. We have recognized some international exams, like the Brazilian and also some Chinese exams, like Liancao and Gaokao. And we have a foundation here on Portuguese language to Chinese students, and we integrate refugees in that foundation years in order they have the minimum, the B1 level in Portuguese language. And this Portuguese language, this foundation year is for different areas. So they learn the language one year and they have the minimum to enroll to a course degree. But we have a problem with medicine because refugees are considered like international students, and we are in contact with the Ministry of Higher Education in order to consider refugees as national because they can apply to medicine because we haven't placements to all Portuguese students. Our Portuguese students have to do medicine in Spain or Czech Republic. So, but for other course, we have some refugees that start medicine one semester. We have two girls, and they choose another course. They choose to do pharmaceutical sciences. So it's a nice experience.
Did you realize Ahmed mentioned I'm a refugee and then in the next sentence migrants like me? It's not very different. It is? Do you feel different? Yeah. If you want to study not medicine, but you can come to Coimbra. We will receive you. You need to learn Portuguese, sorry.
They are the same. Migrant and refugee, they are the same. It's not a big difference between each other. Also, we are in here. We are people in here. We are star. We push ourselves to like learning this language, Finnish language. So we should have support, not only sitting.
Let me just say something about my metaphor. All my paper is about business. Because in liberal capitalist societies, that's the language who sells the idea of why to receive. Because we will win something. It's not because we are very good persons and we want to integrate. I want to say to people, we will win something from you. You will win something from us. This will be a win-win situation. If we can build something from our experience, past experience, and present experience. That's why capitalistic vision, business of education, can sell this idea to a wider public. Because it's not about losing money. It's about gain from refugees, gain different kinds of things, of course. It's not only money, but social relations, social capital, multiculturalism, diversity. Of course, I feel we are winning from all of that. What I'm trying to say is we are losing because we are not acting. And that's the point.
Maybe then have any closing words?
Yeah, it's just maybe not to use the word super diversity, but I think that all people are unique in that sense. I think they shouldn't be labeled, but still I think that in this uniqueness there's a difference. If you are invited, if you have voluntarily moved from, for some reason, I think that is quite a big difference. So I think it shouldn't be ignored. But even because of that, I think it's very important that we are sharing. We are human beings and we can be sharing. Instead of proving, maybe I don't believe in so much in that kind of tactics or strategy that you should persuade the system because then you become part of the system. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that we need to think about these things like migration and the so-called refugee crisis from the structural level. But I also agree with Anja very much that, and I'm a bit allergic maybe to the discourse of academic capitalism and winning and losing and profit. So I think that what really matters in the end are the personal stories. So thanks for sharing them with us. Thank you.
Thank you. thanks a lot for our panel. Yeah, I think we would have a lot of things to discuss still, but we need to continue with our program. And I hope that you will continue these discussions throughout these 2 days anyway. So thanks for the panel. Next, we will have still, to finish this opening plenary, we will have an informative briefing from Simo. So Senior Program Advisor Sini Pippo and Sofia Lähdesniemi. Please, the stage is yours.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone. So as introduced, I'm Sofia Lähdeniemi, and next to me is standing my colleague, Sini Pippo. We come from CIMO, the Center for International Mobility, and we were kindly given a few moments to introduce to all of you a few supporting instruments helping immigrants and refugees to integrate within the Finnish higher education system. These instruments are, as portrayed up there on the wall, the Scholar Rescue Fund, online linguistic support for refugees, and some EU-funded program project funding for refugee thematics. We will start off with presenting the Scholar Rescue Fund with showing all of you a short video up there.
I was always looking over my shoulder. I lived every day of my life wondering if today would be my last. I needed to live and do the work and research I was intended to do without the threat of being killed.
I was not fearful of speaking out on issues that I thought were important. So they tried to make me shut up, first with harassment, then with threats. When that didn't work, they put me in prison.
If I escaped, it is because somewhere someone took care of my life.
Now I live in freedom. I live in liberty. I can say anything. I can read anything I feel like reading. I can write anything I feel like writing, which would have been impossible for me in my home country. I live in complete freedom.
Although I'm displaced and separated from my people, I continue my academic work and advocate for the basic freedoms that my fellow citizens have been denied for decades. I long to be home, but until that is possible, I will make my voice heard from abroad.
And living in peace is not something you can appreciate until you live without it.
SRF changed our life from fear and terror to peace.
Those were real voices of scholars who have participated in Scholar Rescue Fund in different countries around the world. So the program has been operational since 2002. And as you noticed, higher education institutions from 55 countries have hosted more than 600 scholars up until now, and CIMO has joined the IIE Scholar Rescue Fund earlier this year. And what does it mean that CIMO has joined the Scholar Rescue Fund? It means that we co-fund scholarships for scholars from Syria and Iraq to arrive to Finnish higher education institutions to continue their work in safety. The program remains open to applications from scholars all around the world who feel threatened and cannot continue their work safely in their home country. But in Finland, the CIMO scholarships are at the moment limited and the priority is given to Iraqi and Syrian scholars. The funding available for individual scholar is around $50,000 per year. So you can also bring your family in case you have a family. And the program is open for all Finnish higher education institutions and to all academic fields. Scholars can apply to the program from any country in the world, also if they have recently arrived to a safe country. And there is a rolling deadline for applications.
Okay, but then about a few words about online linguistic support. There is a quite newly established online platform for learning languages, which is called the OLS. And it was originally launched for the EU-funded mobility programs within Erasmus+. But in the light of the current migration situation in Europe, the European Commission decided to open up this language learning platform for all the refugees arriving in European Union countries. The idea being that studying languages via this system, it would help the refugees to integrate mainly for the European education system. But basically, these courses available via this platform, they are available for any refugee arriving, for example, in Finland, with one single prerequisite being that you are willing to learn a language. Currently, there are 12 languages available. There is English that has been introduced right from the beginning of the program. In this year, we got Swedish on board, but next spring, there will also be Finnish courses available. And this is why we are here today. We want to kind of spread the word of the possibility of studying languages via the system, mainly because it's free. So anyone could benefit from these language courses. And we understand that currently, of course, language courses, they are offered, for example, at the refugee centers, these vastaanottokeskukset. But often the situation is that you need to queue in order to get to the course, and you may not have anything to do while waiting. So this is a possibility that you could start learning by yourself or maybe with a friend or someone else to learn new languages. It's quite simple to use, the system. It can be used at any time from any device as long as there's an internet connection. It's available for asylum applicants and those that already have obtained a refugee status. And the system, while you are enrolled, it allows you to study for 13 months with the platform. I will not go into details about the system, but basically it's quite vast with the contents. There are different modules covering different language skills, such as grammar and vocab and reading, writing, speaking. And there are also these interactive sections. There are these MOOC lectures on different teams, and there are tutoring sessions where you can interact with other people in other countries or other refugees in Finland. How it works is that there needs to be a Finnish higher education institutions who provides this course license for a refugee. But we have really good examples with the SIMHE projects, for example, that here in Jyväskylä, it's the University of Jyväskylä who is officially taking part, but then the SIMHE project is the actual provider of these course licenses. There is a link for you. You can see afterwards the presentation on the courses, on how they are alike. And we are here also on the poster session, so please come and talk to us if you are interested.
There are also different project opportunities for higher education institutions to develop, for example, procedures in integrating refugees into higher education. I will really briefly just mention the strategic partnerships with annual calls, and you apply through national agency in Finland through CIMO. And there are also, please excuse the EU jargon, but KA3 projects, support for policy reform. There are these specific separate calls targeting this thematic, and they are provided not annually maybe, but quite often, and there are then separate information provided on those. Basically, both of these project opportunities, you need to have three institutions from three European countries, and they are transnational projects, around 500,000, the maximum, but we can provide you with more detailed information, just that you know that this type of project opportunities exist through the EU funding.
Yeah, so we were given 10 minutes. We might have used 11.
Yeah.
So for further information, please have a look on the web sites that we have provided in the presentation, and you are very welcome to come and talk to us on the break. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the useful information. So, well, on my behalf, I would like to thank all the speakers and the audience for the first plenary, which I hope has given some food for thought to be used for digging deeper into these themes in the two upcoming days that we will spend here in this building. Yes, I believe I will now give the word to Katinka and Bhavani, maybe, or Alex.
Yeah.
To guide us forward with today's program. So thank you.
Thank you, Johanna.